Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 93. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
I guess this is Ethan.
And I guess this is Melissa.
Yay! Wow.
We're all here physically, if not completely here mentally. Yeah.
Nothing has changed.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, well, let's just kick this thing off with what we've watched this week. Ethan, do you want to kick it off?
Fine! Okay, well...
so angry today. You need to eat something, dude.
Gotta get some poutine in here. Anyway, I watched just a lot of horror this week, basically. First thing, Hellraiser.
Nice.
Josh would be...
Had you seen it before?
No, this is my first time. Jesus wept. But yeah, it was good. Very visually interesting. Narrative, little clunky, but good. Next thing, All the Boys Love Mandy Lane. Now, have any of you people here heard of this?
I have. Yeah, with Amber Heard. How is that?
I liked it, actually. The thing about it is, I sort of expected it to be an '80s throwback, but it's very bleak, which I really enjoyed.
Is it like The Strangers?
I haven't seen The Strangers, so can't say. Next thing, I watched I Walked with a Zombie.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, it was, this is, of course, a reteaming of the people who brought us Cat People, yeah. Val Luton and Jacques...
Tournier, yeah.
Jacques Cousteau. And... whereas Cat People was very much about sex, this has a lot of racial subtext to it. Mm-hmm. Pretty interesting stuff. Awesome atmosphere. Good movie. Next, The Bird with the Crystal Plumage, the Dario Argento film.
Are you an Argento fan?
I haven't seen Suspiria. Yeah, in its entirety. So... I guess not, but I really enjoyed it, actually. I really makes me want to watch more, how do you pronounce it?
Giallo films? Yeah.
Yeah, Galileo films. And, really fun movie. Reanimator.
Love that film.
Nice.
Yes. So just so grotesque to the point you just want to laugh. And something I noticed, The guy in the movie, he has a Stop Making Sense poster in his room.
Yes, he does,
and,
yeah.
Of course, that's the Talking Heads concert film. And I was thinking, is that just a coincidence, or is that a clever allusion to the fact that later in the film there will be a Talking Head? Yeah, and Paranormal Activity. Want to get into it?
I think it's not the second coming of the horror movie, but I thought it was definitely creepy. It definitely stayed with me, and I'll be honest, the night after I saw it, I did sleep on the couch. So I was like, there's no way I'm sleeping alone in my bedroom after seeing that. I liked it. I thought it was very good.
Same here, Barry. Same here.
You posted you were pretty freaked out on your Twitter.
Yeah, I have to admit, I had to go to the bathroom after I watched it, and I was so scared, I held it in all night.
Wow. That is truly frightening.
That means you didn't get much sleep that night, did you?
Oh, you know. And Melissa, you were talking last week about Blair Witch.
Yeah.
Of course, no one has heard that by now. But
I know.
You're
I know.
Saying. Anyway, you were you were talking about how there are times when you just were like, no, you'd put the camera down. And
yeah.
There was definitely a lot of cases in this movie where it was a little contrived.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the boyfriend in the movie was just such a
douchebag.
To the point where it's like, I'll just say he kind of had it coming. I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm.
He's like Kevin Federline. He's such a freaking moron. Honestly, it's like if Kevin Federline could become a Ghostbuster, this is what it would be like. He's such an idiot. And I really liked the girl. I mean, I liked her performance. I thought she was a very engaging character and performer. I thought she really grounded the movie for me, because when it came to him, I felt like it was like watching Johnny Knoxville in a horror movie.
Oh, yeah. Like when he bought the Ouija board and he's like, no, I just borrowed it. I didn't buy it. That's not to buy one. I just borrowed it. It's
yeah.
Like, oh.
Yeah.
Anyway, and last thing, Event Horizon.
Oh yeah.
What do you think of this? Have you seen
Lame.
It before? Really?
It was like a horror version of Star Trek V.
Except instead of God, they went to hell. Okay, you know, that's really appropriate.
And all it was missing was Scotty hitting his head. Like it just reminded me all the times when they'd like see their fears. Reminded me when Cybok showed them their fears and stuff. And there's even a scene with a guy using like rocket boots and stuff. And it's like, yeah, lame.
So maybe I need to revisit and, like, this.
I kind of wrote the movie off actually with the opening credits when it was like these lame graphics with this like cheesy techno music. I was like, oh, yeah.
What were you saying, Barry?
Obviously, I saw it in college, and I didn't think it was as scary as everybody said it was, and I didn't see it on the big screen, which I'm told that that's a huge difference. But I remember being very creeped out by it. The scenes where you get like little video images of, it, you know, hell. And I thought that Sam Neill was especially good, but I didn't think it was the Second Coming.
Prince of Darkness did it better.
I would have to agree with you. I'm not a huge fan of Prince of Darkness, but I do agree with you.
You only brought up Prince of Darkness for one reason, didn't you?
Why?
Because who responded to your talk about Prince of Darkness?
Okay, well, announcement on Twitter. Edgar Wright replied to me, my tweet. How cool is that? How cool is that?
That's
high five.
Wonderful.
I went and looked it up and even read it. Yep.
Yeah.
That's great. So what, I was not here for this. What happened? What did you write?
Well, he was talking about his top five John Carpenter movies. I'm like, missing fucking Prince of Darkness, man. And he's like, well, you know, I enjoy aspects of Prince of Darkness, but overall not quite top five worthy John Carpenter. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, cool, sweet. Cool. Now two of us have talked to Edgar Wright.
That's neat. Yay. That's neat.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just geek cred that's not really, but, you know, it's still cool.
It's Edgar Wright. That's neat.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what I watched, so Barry, why don't you go next?
What have I seen? Speaking of Stuart Gordon, I saw his follow-up movie to Reanimator from Beyond. Have you guys seen that? All you need to know about it, there's a scene in the film where Jeffrey Combs is possessed by this monster from another dimension. He bites out a nurse's eyeball, spits it out, and then sucks her brains out through the eye hole. And, you know, I got to say, I started laughing because I got to say, I've seen some things, but I've never seen that before.
It's like in Bubba Hotep when the mummy's stealing the soul from the old lady's butt.
Right, right. It's like, you got to hand it to him for even coming up with that.
Makes me wish that we'd started going to Starfest 1 year earlier, because that's when Jeffrey Combs came out.
I actually saw him.
I know, but we didn't get to, yeah.
That's true, we didn't get to interview him, yeah, and he was really cool. Stephen King's Sleepwalkers, which I saw years and years ago, it's now on Hulu. It's
like a miniseries?
Actually, no, there were a bunch similar to that, but no, Sleepwalkers was actually a theatrical film made strictly for the screen, directed by Mick Garris, who did a lot of Stephen King TV movies,
wow,
like The Stand.
Okay.
Yeah, every geek needs to see this movie. For one thing, it's intentionally hilarious, hilariously funny. It's a horror movie that's supposed to laugh in. It's so freaking funny. Mark Hamill, Joe Dante, John Landis, Stephen King, and Clive Barker all have roles in this movie. Like, seriously,
okay.
Every fanboy needs to see this movie. It is laugh out loud funny. It is incredibly gory. It is knowingly stupid, and it is just irresistible. I can't defend the movie other than say I enjoyed every second of it. Tim Burton's Corpse Bride, I still like this film. It's not The Nightmare Before Christmas, but I like it. I think it's very charming and very sweet.
What were you going to say, Ethan?
Go ahead.
I just had a brief meh interjection.
Oh, okay. There you go. Hating on Burton. Wreck. I got to say, I was very impressed with Wreck.
I love Wreck.
Very impressed. It truly scared me, and I thought it was very, very well done.
Now, have you seen the trailer for the second one?
No, not yet.
Oh, we may have to fix that after the show.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
It picks up immediately, like during the end, and picks up like right after the movie ends, the first one ends.
Nice. Okay. Garfield's Halloween Adventure, one of the great,
ooh,
great Halloween specials. I love Halloween.
So does it stack up to Great Pumpkin?
It's so different. I wouldn't want to compare it. The animation is sharper and more vivid, but, you know, different deal. But it's really great. It's really funny. Hocus Pocus.
I love that movie.
You know, I got to say, like, it's interesting because, like, it was written by Mick Garris, who did a bunch of Stephen King movies, and David Kirshner, who created the Child's Play movies. And, you know, it's at a Disney movie, but you take Bette Midler out of it, and it's kind of a horror film. I mean, really, it's
kind of
really,
like a throwback to like the Haunted Mansion kind of ride, like how it's not afraid to have a dark side to it.
I'd say darker, though. It's really sick because you've got that character who loses his head, loses his fingers. You've got the book made out of flesh that was given to the witches from the devil, and they actually say that. You got the talking cat who gets run over by a truck but can't die. I mean, it's a really sick movie. Like, you take out the wacky witches, and it's a horror film. So it's interesting because, like, I'm still not convinced the movie works, but it's really well made, really well done, and so entertaining.
Wasn't like Sarah Jessica Parker supposed to be like the hot witch in it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of funny considering, like,
here we go. I like Sarah Jessica Parker.
No, not that I have anything against her, just, you know, her being like voted unsexiest woman in the world or something.
That is so freaking mean. That is so mean.
I wholeheartedly agree,
it's
Ethan.
Misogynistic and stupid, but I'm just saying it's kind of funny.
Because yes, misogyny is funny.
But yeah, Barry, every year when I was younger, the Disney Channel would just play the crap out of that movie.
Yeah.
Every Halloween, I have to watch that.
But it's scary, though. I mean, it's scary now. I'm 32, and that movie still freaks me out. When she's in the bed and she jumps out at him and they're in the closet waiting, I'm like, this is scary.
Yeah. I like the cat, Binks.
I like the cat, too. And that was one of the first uses of like a CGI talking animal. It looks really good for 93.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let me ask a quick derailing question. We're talking about Halloween movies here. Do you think Gremlins is more of a Christmas movie?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
Because working at Hollywood, that movie has been rented nonstop.
Yeah.
It comes in, someone else wants to rent it. I'm like, really?
I watched that this week, and...
Yeah. It works for Halloween, but it's... Yeah.
I don't think it's really a very Christmas movie. I mean...
I think if you're sick to death of hearing those jingles and songs on the radio, I think it's the perfect antidote for that.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of scary, though.
Oh, yeah. No question.
Yeah, there were several parents who came in and rented it to expose their kids to their first scary movie.
That's a little too strong, I think.
They're like, guys, like, well, it's rated PG. I'm like, this is the reason the PG-13 was made, right?
Yeah, that's 1984 PG.
Think about 25 years after the movie came out, people would kind of have gotten used to the fact that it's pretty scary by now.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not going to say anything about the clientele of the certain store that I work at. So,
oh, okay, there you go. No, there's. I think there are better, you know, in chaser horror movies for kids, but I wouldn't say that one. That no, I wouldn't go there.
Okay, what else have you got, sir?
Halloween 3: Season of the Witch, which I think I like a little bit better every time I go back to it, but more of a curiosity than anything. Lawnmower.
This is a Halloween. Sorry, this is a Halloween movie, but the song by Donovan.
I love that song, by the way. But I don't even know why it's called that, to be honest. But I love that song by Donovan. Thank you for bringing that up. And The Lawnmower Man.
Nice. Not Lawnmower Man 2?
Oh, Lawnmower Man 2 is terrible. But the first one, man, the effects in that are still really cool. You know, it's kind of like Tron, where the effects are supposed to have a very specific look, so you can like overlook how dated they are. They're just really cool. But you take away the effects, the movie's kind of corny, but the effects are cool.
Cool.
So that's it.
Right on. I've only got one thing outside of one of the releases that's coming up on this Tuesday, and that would have been Richard Pryor Live and Smokin'. And dude was tripping on something during this, because dang, this was during 71, which I'm guessing that was during his heroin times. Or one of the heroin
times. Well, he's had so many of those, though.
His first line, he gets up to the mic... Man, I haven't had any cocaine today. I miss my cocaine. it's honestly, it's pretty bad. There's a part where he talks about why Dracula doesn't have any black guys in his harem or whatever, which is hilarious. And he talks about winos knowing God. That's kind of funny too. But that's like the two bits out of a 46-minute set. And there are points where he'll just tell his joke and just kind of stare off into nowhere. Like he's just kind of tripping.
That's funny, actually.
I hope you go... I mean, is this the first...
This is the first, yes.
Okay.
I'll check out other stuff, but this
I hope
was...
you do. Because, he's done some great ones. I recommend Richard Pryor Live in Concert, and especially Richard Pryor Live on the Sunset Strip. Those are great. Really great.
I thought you were going to say Superman 3.
No, I was not going to say Superman 3 or The Toy. His movie career is...
Brewster's Millions,
I like. Jojo Dancer is great. That's a fictionalized version of his life that he directed. That's a really good one. Really strong movie. He's done, and Stir Crazy. I'm forgetting the really fun one, Silver Bullets.
Lost Highway.
Pryor's done some good movies, but most of them are his concert films. Hollywood didn't know what to do with him. You know, he was too edgy for like...
Now, he started off doing like Cosby kind of comedy, right? When he first started.
Stand-up?
Yeah.
That's
what I'd heard.
Yes and no, but I mean, I think he really broke through with, like, you know, really, really, really dangerous, edgy stuff. But he did a cartoon show called Pryor's Place. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
like back in the 80s. I mean, he was trying to become Cosby, and he even did a movie called Moving, where it was like a Cosby kind of comedy, but it, you know, the cute stuff never worked for him. I mean, he was in the Muppet movie, completely out of place in that film.
He didn't go Ice Cube route.
No, but he was like Sam Kinison. His stuff was so dangerous at times that it's like, you know, some record stores would even carry his albums. That's why he's one of the best ones.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Melissa, I will let you end it.
I finally finished Dark City.
Cool.
Since I started that and fell asleep. But oh, I just loved that. I just loved the end. And Kiefer Sutherland just really worked for me.
He's so weird in that.
It could have not worked for me, but I liked it. So.
And to be clear, you watched the director's cut, so you haven't seen the theatrical cut.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It didn't seem too terribly long or anything, so I don't know why you wouldn't watch the director's cut. But
is it substantially longer, Dave?
Not substantially longer, but it's better.
Okay.
Because
I love it. I haven't seen it. I've only seen the director's cut.
Yes. Well, mm-hmm. Whenever Melissa brings it back, then you can borrow it next.
Mm-hmm. Groovy.
I also rewatched American Beauty, and I've seen it before, but just something about this time that I watched it was like, ugh, this is just amazing. Like, I just love that movie, and can totally see why so many people have that as in their top 10 or as one of their favorite movies. And
like
I just
Josh.
I just felt like it was such a satire on everything about life and all the horrible and unfortunate things that happened to the characters. Like, this time around watching it, I just laughed, and it was just funny because I think that that's kind of what the point of the film was or is. And I don't know, it just felt kind of Fight Club-ish in a way. Like, at the very beginning, you know, when his life's just being explained, like, his relationship with his family, and I don't know, just, it was very satirical, and I love Kevin Spacey, so.
He's terrific, and he won the Oscar for that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I watched Gremlins, and yeah, this part, I want to say it's towards the end, where Phoebe Cates' character, Kate, is explaining how she found out that there is no Santa Claus. I will just leave it at that is the most messed up way to find out there is no Santa Claus, but...
I never thought they'd find a way to top it, but they do in Gremlins, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was Abraham Lincoln's birthday, right?
Abraham Lincoln's birthday.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know, I definitely think Gremlins 2 is better, besides weird discrepancies, like... The people in the first one who get run over by the snowplow or a tractor or something,
right.
Remember that? They're in the second one.
Right, the Futtermans,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, yeah. So just some odd things like that. But and the animatronics are just so much better in the second one.
Yeah.
But whatever. It's fun.
First one's
to
got
just
this
put
sick
on
charm
and,
to it, though.
Yeah.
Just...
It's more of a horror movie than anything else. And it's still really freaky.
Well, yeah, the Gremlins 2 came out about the time when they were doing, like, didn't they do it like a Gizmo cartoon at one point?
I don't know. I don't remember.
They were really toying up Gizmo and stuff. And
I know they definitely had the action figures. I mean, I had a plastic figure. I had a fluffy Gizmo. I had a lot of Gremlins toys and books and, you know, kind of inappropriate now that I think about it, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gloriously so.
Yeah. And I also watched Knocked Up.
Oh.
Just because it was on TV. So
I don't know.
The first time I saw it in theaters, I walked out and was just kind of like, ugh, I did not like that. But whatever, I guess it's okay. Seth Rogen's not that annoying. Like, one of his better acting movies.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with that.
That works. Cool. All right. Well, let's talk about what hit theaters this past weekend and didn't win the horror spot. That's shocking to me.
Dun, dun. Well, we could start off with that. Opening wider and even wider this week for Halloween weekend, Paranormal Activity. Yay. Mironaire's Amelia with Hilary Swank, who I like a lot, and Richard Gere, my dad's favorite actor. Don't know why I threw that out, which opened outside of the top 10. So goodbye, Amelia.
Ouch.
Your dad's a big American Gigolo fan, I guess.
He always tells me he loves Richard Gere's hair. He's like, God, he's got such great hair.
Okay.
Which is strange. So my dad's a real ladies' man, so it's weird that he would say something that... like that. Anyway, what else? Opening wider in limited release, Lars von Trier's Antichrist, which we'll be talking
Chaos
about more.
Reigns.
How does because you've seen it, Ethan, how does it sound when he say, is it like that, or what does it sound like when the Fox says it?
It's kind of creepy and
is it like
electronic.
Chaos Reigns. Is it like that, or like?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Cool. And then the number two movie of the week, shockingly so, Tobin Bell is Jigsaw in Saw 6.
And you're, I think you're the only one who actually got to see it.
Yeah, what's with you slackers? You guys haven't seen Saw 6 yet? I'm the one who saw Saw 6.
No, but I was going to ask, is it true this is about the public option? That's what I've heard.
The public option.
The healthcare thing.
Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's like a Michael Moore slasher film. At one point, Jigsaw...
That just broke my brain. I'm sorry.
That's one of the reasons it's so terrible. At one point, Jigsaw has this long monologue where he's looking right at the camera, speechifying about the difference between healthcare in Asia and the United States. I'm not even kidding. It's really ridiculous. It's one thing to hear Michael Moore say all this, but Jigsaw? It is so... The movie is awful on so many levels, but the socio-political aspect of it is just so laughable.
Okay,
it's
when you say all that was Saw, all I can think is...
Yardley!
Like, no sense. I just hear, what in the, huh? Yeah, that, wow, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible and really laughable. One thing I went on about in my review is, like, you know, I could believe talking robots from outer space. I really can, but I can't believe that Costas Mandalor, you know, playing Lieutenant Hoffman, he's inherited the Jigsaw game plan, as it were. Well, if you've seen the end of the last
movie.
That's
true, yeah.
He's operating this whole thing in an abandoned zoo. All by himself. Wow. This thing, I mean, these traps are like rides at Disneyland. They are so complicated. We're talking fire, electricity, clamps and stuff. And he's doing this all by himself in this abandoned zoo. And at one point, there's even like a, you know, a children's carousel in there. How did he get that into the zoo? Those things are heavy. Did he actually get like Teamsters? So like, I mean, wouldn't they be suspicious? You're loading like a carousel into an abandoned zoo. I mean, wouldn't people hear screams from an abandoned zoo and know like the monkeys are no longer there?
How would you get a hold of an abandoned zoo in the first place?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's just the movie has so many problems like that. And at one point, the puppet shows up, you know, the infamous puppet, and it's like an animatronic version of it. It's like not only does Jigsaw want to be like John Doe, he wants to be like Jim Henson as well. It's just, it's so absurd. I mean, it's laughable, okay, and it's really disgusting. I mean, the opening scene, and the note I'll definitely have to end it on, I think like the height of absurdity is not only does this movie have a lot of flashbacks to help novice Saw guys like me, you know, follow the plot and everything, but at one point there's a flashback to a scene that happened just 5 minutes ago, as if we'd forget a woman chopping off her arm with an axe, as if we'd forget that. You know.
It's actually funny you mentioned that because I was just on Facebook last night. And my cousin messaged me saying he went and saw it on a date and he had never seen any of the first five. Where he said the flashbacks helped made it all, you know, make sense. And that he almost threw up on his date. So, that too.
Well, if he almost threw up, then that means it was a good date, so.
Sorry, Blair. Sorry I had to tell everyone.
Ratting out your family. Wow, okay. So, yeah. All right. I might wait on that one then. I'll see it. I will see it. Mm. There's no doubt about it. Mm. I mean, I've seen the first five. I might as well keep going.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how we will feel about it because we've seen the rest of it. I don't know if that will change anything. I mean, I know you have a pretty good impression of all the other movies, so.
You've got to idea what happened. Before even seeing it, you had the complete play-by-play pretty much.
I live vicariously through Josh, who would always give me the scene-by-scene. Sometimes, like, he would recreate it in, like...
Oh, I know.
Which was so much fun to watch him, like, and then the buzzsaw goes down and it chops him in half. And yeah. Yeah, so, I guess...
Barry,
yeah. Yep.
Barry, may I ask, this is getting off the topic of the Saw films and the public option, but... have you seen Where the Wild Things Are yet?
I did, yeah.
That's right, you didn't get a chance to talk about it last
year. Yeah, I loved it. Did you like it, Ethan?
Well, in the podcast that Dave hasn't put up yet, which...
it's been a bad week. Let's just leave it at that, yeah.
It's okay,
you'll just
Dave.
Have to listen to it.
And... Don't apologize. Anyway, go ahead, Ethan.
I thought it was great, just saying that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, Dave and I talked about it. He felt there's a lot of critics... like Dave, who felt that it was very depressing and a little too dark and strange. I really loved it. I really, really loved it, and it's honestly grown on me.
But with more perspective, I like it more and more. I mean, I appreciate it. Like again, as I said in our Wild 105 review, it's a film. It's a good film, not necessarily a great movie. You know, there's that. It's more of an artistic.
Oh yeah, no question. It's a personal film. I bought a ticket last night to Where the Wild Things Are. Watched 30 minutes of it, and then I snuck into Saw. So well, I got to say, nice. Rewatching the first, because I'm not going to support Saw. There's no way. I got to say, like,
you're a criminal, Barry.
Well, you
a
know,
smooth criminal. Okay, wait.
Ooh, thank you.
Smooth criminal.
But watching the first 30 minutes of it again, like, I had a hard time getting up to leave. It just it's so mesmerizing and so honest to me. I love what a personal, what an honest, and what an edgy film it is. Yeah, I love that film.
I feel like the general public that I've talked to who's viewed it is confused.
Yeah.
As to how to feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or even on the news, I think I was in the gym and the news was on some TV and, you know, Where the Wild Things Are is too scary, not a kid's movie. And like people are, you know, complaining about it. But
yeah.
Do you think it should have been marketed as more of an art film?
No.
Would that have helped anything at all?
I think it kind of was, actually.
I agree. I think it was, too. It doesn't seem like a kid's movie based on the previews.
It's a little of yes and no, because on one hand, you're right. They definitely kind of made it look a little artsy. But, you know, if you go to Toys R Us right now or like Barnes & Nobles, there are action figures and books and puzzles. Oh, yeah. Like Barnes & Noble has its own. Next to Harry Potter, they've got this whole Where the Wild Things Are set with like action figures and...
Gotta get me a Mark Ruffalo action figure.
Well, don't you think they're also trying to promote a second coming of this book?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what
a revival.
Think.
Yeah, that would make mm-hmm. sense.
The book is so open to interpretation. I think that's the great thing about the movie. It really is, you know, one man's very personal take on this story. And you know, I don't mind that the boy has to go on a literal journey. I don't mind that the room doesn't come to life like in the book. I think it's interesting the direction they took him.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, then let's talk about what is coming out on DVD this week.
DVD this week. What do we got? Ice Age, Dawn of the Dinosaurs. I like this movie. It's fun. Available in regular and Blu-ray. Also in the double DVD pack with the Scrat Pack. With more adventures of Scrat and his friends. I love Scrat. I had to mention that. Tinkerbell and the Lost Treasure. Why am I even mentioning this?
I don't know. I was wondering. I mean, I know they actually did a screening for this.
They did.
I skipped it, but...
I'm always amazed.
We're always amazed. Yes.
Okay. Just ignore it. Go on.
All right. Never mind. Orphan, my pick for worst film of the year thus far, although I've seen a few runner-ups. Orphan, don't see it. Battlestar Galactica, The Plan. Is this a TV movie?
It was supposed to be. It doesn't come out on Sci-Fi Channel for like another month.
Oh.
It's just an odd choice.
It is odd. Yeah. Let's see. The United States of Tara, Emmy Award-winning television show with Toni Collette, who won the Emmy for it. Let's see.
It's written by Diablo Cody.
Really?
Yeah. It's
oh, I didn't know that. That's cool. Is it any good? Have you seen it, Ethan?
Yeah, I really enjoy it. It seems like when it first hit the television waves, it was pretty hyped up, but seems like people kind of lost interest in it halfway through, but yeah, it's a good show. I'd recommend it.
Okay, I'll check that out. Whatever Works, the new Woody Allen film with Larry David and Evan Rachel Ward, is it?
Wood,
sorry.
From The Wrestler?
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Wood.
It was funny. Not the best thing Woody Allen's done, but it definitely is better than Scoop. One of my favorite films... From the 80s, Night of the Creeps, the Fred Dekker film, the movie he made before Monster Squad, finally available on a special edition DVD. Nothing Like the Holidays, which was okay, came out last November to Little Fanfare, and now it's coming on DVD with Little Fanfare. Available on Criterion, Costa-Gavras' film Z, excellent film. Let's see, The Prisoner, the complete series with Patrick McGoohan. One of the all-time great sci-fi.
Not even good sci-fi. Shows. It's just one of the best TV shows of all
time. Yeah, I totally agree with you, Dave. Not quite in the same caliber, but still fun, especially for genre fans. Tales from the Dark Side, Season 2. Good stuff. You know you want it. Monty Python, Almost the Truth, The Lawyer's Cut, which Dave has seen.
Is that the last one you got? Or?
Yep, that's the last one I've got.
Okay. Yeah, I actually just watched that like last night / this morning. And it is great. I think Ed Douglas over at Coming Soon just has been watching it too, and he's loved it too. It's a fairly brief, I mean, hour and 40-some minute long history of Monty Python and how they came together and working through the series, through the movies and everything. What I love is just how frank the whole movie is. You can tell these guys have been friends for a long time, and they have that perspective that say, you know what, I just totally yelled at so-and-so when this happened during Monty Python. Like, John Cleese talks about how he finally snapped at Terry Gilliam when they were doing the scene where the cow goes flying at him. Because he had them keep moving like an inch to the right or the left or put their head down. He's like, look, we're not animated cardboard cutouts. We're people. And like just totally just went off on him. And, you know, they both laugh about it afterwards. And it's just got this great perspective, especially as people, you know, even if you saw it when it first ran in the U.S. here, this was produced well before then. I mean, the TV show was. So it gave a lot of really good perspective. It's really fascinating. It's funny. Yeah, it's well worth checking out.
Excellent.
And let's move on to news.
Let's.
I wanted to throw something out there while I'm thinking about it, because you mentioned Hulu. What have we all heard about the news of Hulu?
Mm-mm. Yeah.
They're not going to start charging, are they?
Yes, they
are. No!
Well,
really?
Here's the thing. Essentially, there's been a follow-up piece that's come out since then, but one of the marketing guys, wherever, was like, we got to start getting paid for our content. That's pretty much what he said.
In that exact voice?
That's how it read to me. I don't know why, but it totally did. Like Red Fox saying it. I don't know why, but it did.
So is this going to happen?
Well, now there's been a follow-up piece that came out saying that they're going to do like what they currently do now to an extent. There will be a free version and a premium version. Whether that means that you get like the last few episodes of an episode of a TV show and then you can do the premium to watch all the episodes of a series or what, we're not sure. But they are doing some sort of pay version of Hulu.
See, every time I use Hulu, I can only ever find the last couple episodes of whatever it is I want to watch anyway, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, likewise.
The funny thing...
I'm not very impressed with it.
So. The funny thing is most of the comments I've been reading in these articles is like, oh, BitTorrent, my old long-lost friend, mm-hmm. how we're going to start spending time together again. Mm-hmm. Like, day.
Man, that's a shame.
Well, I mean, apparently there's talk about that it's just about breaking even now with the ad revenue.
They're just breaking even, really?
Barely, yeah.
They do so many ads, you figured...
Well, it's one ad every 15 minutes, which is still better than TV. Mm-hmm. And I think as they start justifying, they can even charge more to the advertisers. But they're, you know, they're always out, you know, Spaceballs 2, the quest for more money.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So, Ethan, I know you got a lot of stories. Why don't you kick a couple off?
Okay. Well, Mad Max 4 is officially a go.
Yay, Fury Road.
Yay.
Is Tina Turner coming back?
I hope so.
I would like me some Thulsa Doom, but it's official that Mad Mel is not in this?
Yeah, it's funny, because they had a press conference, a video of a press conference about it, and one of the reporters was like, hey, is Mel Gibson going to be in it? And George Miller kind of basically said, no, not really. But I was, for some reason, I just realized I have Mel Gibson and Arnold Schwarzenegger confused for some reason, because when she said that, I thought, oh, no, because he's the governor of California.
Wow. Was that another food deprivation day, or?
I think so.
Oh, okay. That works.
Next year is Mel's big return. I'm curious to see, you know, Edge of Darkness is January, and then The Beaver.
The Beaver.
Yeah. I'm very curious, because, you know, I honestly, I love Mel Gibson. I really do. I would love for him to come back in a big way, but, I mean, Edge of Darkness is opening in January, which is never a good sign, and The Beaver, I mean, that could go either way, and it could go in a very bad way if it doesn't
work. You mean like all the headlines have been lately?
I think the pictures of him with the little thing in his hand are hilarious, but, you know, can that sustain a whole movie? That's like a Tom Green skit. That's not a movie.
Hey.
You beat me to the punchline, dude.
Well, you know, no, I say that with respect. I used to love Tom Green on MTV. You know, I really wasn't a big fan of his...
cinematic endeavors?
His cinematic oof, but we'll see.
Well, don't you know, this was... I think it was originally going to happen like 2003 or 2004, but...
That's right.
The Iraq War happened, and that's, I think, right, it was going to shoot around there. But don't you think it would have been funny if it came out... Like, I think it was supposed to come out the same year as Passion of the Christ, so wouldn't that have just been such an interesting follow-up for Gibson?
It would have been really, really bizarre. Yeah, and I think that's one of the smart things Mel did, you know, is to kind of stay out of the spotlight after Passion, you know, and then just segue directly into Apocalypto. And, you know, I think that movie kind of helped with all the controversy that was plaguing him at the time with the getting pulled over. But I don't know.
Yeah,
it was just really expensive water, really. Okay.
I like that, you know. I always, you know, I say this to my students too. I say, love the art, not the artist. But he's a tough one because he is so strange, and his movie choices are starting to look strange too. So, we'll see.
Yep. Okay, so we bring up legal issues. And this has been brewing for the past few weeks, and we really haven't talked about it much. Like, I went on my little tirade about it on Twitter and Facebook, I think. But should we talk about the Roman Polanski situation?
We should.
Okay. So dude went to a Swiss film festival, got picked up by the cops there, and is awaiting extradition or whatever the heck it is that they're talking about doing.
Well, it wasn't even a real... Wasn't it like the whole... the award... They were going to give him an award at the festival, right? But that thing was just bait, wasn't it?
No. The people from the festival were pissed.
I heard otherwise, but...
Really?
Okay. I guess I'm just...
I guess we just really don't know. Regardless, he's in police custody, and you have people on both sides of the issue saying, let him go, and the other people saying, don't you have a brain? Why are you saying that?
How long has he been detained now, or whatever?
I don't know. It's been like a week or two, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know what we can say about this. I don't know. It's like such a loaded question.
I kind of have an opinion.
Well, here. What is the question? Loaded question. What's the question?
What do we think about the situation?
Hmm. Okay. Let me chime in here. Okay. What he did, we all know what he did. It was wrong. There's no way getting around it. It was a terrible crime. But to get, you know, to take a 75-year-old man who did this crime like about over 30 years ago, hasn't repeated it, has shown no signs of ever doing it again, and to go through all this process of to extradite him and get him in jail just kind of seems like a way of saying, ha 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 ha, you can't escape the law, ha 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 ha.
The other side of that, go ahead.
And not the point of the law. Obviously, the point of throwing him in jail would be to show, you know, to rehabilitate him and make sure that he would never do it again, which he has never done. I'm not saying, obviously, you know, he probably should maybe just do it like a year or so. I don't know. But just at this point, it just seems like so kind of just cheap and I don't know.
It's just an afterthought.
Part of the issue is he's never shown any remorse, and he's fled the country to he said, oh, I don't like the way this is going, so I'm just going to flee the country. That's not what... Mm-hmm. In what world is this, in any way, is this right?
Well, I mean, how do you know he hasn't shown any remorse? You follow him around with the documentary crew?
You know, he probably would have done so publicly by now. Like you said, it's been 30 years.
I'm sure, like, I mean, again, I'm just making assumptions here, but I'm sure he feels guilty about it, like, every day of his life.
And let me be very clear here. I think he pled to a lesser charge. Do I think it's where the justice system failed? Probably. But there's no need to be, like, people are like calling for a retrial and all that. No, let's just take it based off what it is. Like you said, maybe a year or whatever, you know, for fleeing the country, trying to, you know, evade the justice system. But in what way is it worth – how can you justify fleeing the country because you don't like what outcome you're going to get? I mean, that's where my problem is. I mean, there's a reason why there's an appeals process.
Yeah, well, like, I understand. Like I said, if this was, like, I don't know, 1983 and this was happening, I'd be like, yeah, just throw the guy in jail.
And I can understand that. This is kind of, like, trumped up out of nowhere, which partially, you said you just watched part of the Polanski documentary. That kind of stirred all this back up, didn't it?
Yeah, I watched a bit of the documentary about it, the case, Roman Polanski Wanted Desired, it was on the movie channel, and... I actually didn't get like past 10 minutes of it because they were showing this thing where it was his recounting of the events and the girls recounting the events, and they were like saying he undressed me, and then it would like show a close up of a jacuzzi. I was like, good, I changed the channel. So that's just a sign that I'm not like a pedophile sympathizer, okay? Don't like write me angry emails here. I do not sympathize with pedophilia at all. I think what he did was gross. But I'm just saying this whole process has been ridiculous. Okay, so no angry emails, okay?
Well, and I think that's a very distinct difference of approach as to, oh, let's just call her out. Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah,
to quote her on The View, her and her great opinion, it's not like it was rape. Okay, did you not read the transcripts?
I'm sure this wasn't Sherry Shepherd?
I'm not saying it's almost like a lot of people want to give him a complete pass because he's a great filmmaker, and I think that's a very I have a serious problem with that.
But also these pitchforkers who are like, like, kill him.
Exactly.
Cut off his wiener. I'm like, oh, for
no, I can totally see that. I think there is no, a lot of, very few people are finding a middle ground on this in any kind of opinion, a rational way to look at it, I guess. I don't know. Barry, you've been sitting there very contemplatively. Do you want to say anything at all? You don't have to. You can say no.
I don't know. I have a hard time voicing my opinion on it because it's not popular. Like Ethan, I think pedophiles are disgusting, and I think what he did was disgusting and wrong. But I do think there's a bigger picture here. I think it's not just about the crime. It's about where he was at the time. It doesn't excuse it, but I think it illuminates it in a sense that he needs help, and he certainly needed help. This is a man who was out of the country when the Charles Manson people came and removed his pregnant wife's baby from her chest while she was, you know, completely conscious, smeared blood all over the wall, and did this horrible, disgusting thing that completely ended his life that he loved and knew. Completely damaged him psychologically. And certainly this thing that happened to him, you know, is inexcusable as it is. Nobody was helping him. Nobody knew how to help him. I mean, Jack Nicholson let him at his house, you know, for the weekend, and, you know, and he acted like a complete idiot and did a huge, ridiculous mistake, you know, and the "she looked 18" excuse never holds up, you know. But it's, you know, and even him leaving the country, it's like, I don't see this as, you know, like Ethan, I don't see this as, you know, a criminal mind who so cleverly thwarted the system. I see this as a guy who really needed help, didn't know what the heck he was doing, I don't sympathize with a pedophile or a guy who has underage possible date rape sex with a small girl. I sympathize with a guy who really needs help and is really damaged, and I think his movies illuminate, some of his movies really illuminate his mindset. He did a film called Bitter Moon. I mean, that movie is like Exhibit A in a court case, what's going on in Polanski's mind. I sympathize him because I think he needs help. I really, really do, and I don't know if these demons are behind him. I know that his victim certainly has said, I forgive you, it's in the past, it's over and done with.
And the last thing she wants to do is relive that. Are you right. kidding me?
And I think it's, I mean, it's very American, you know, and I'll just pick on Americans. It's very American of us to, you know, like, try to trash this man who we put on such a high pedestal. I mean, we love to do that. We love to tear down our idols and step on them. But I think this is a very personal case and a very personal crime. I certainly think he needs to pay for his crimes. But I don't think, likewise, like with Ethan saying, I don't think we need to look at him like, you know, this is...
Yeah, we're not going to throw him in jail for the rest of his life.
No. I think he needs to pay for his crimes, but I do think he needs help if he hasn't gotten it already. I do sympathize him in that case. I can't even imagine what I would be going through if what happened to my wife happened, you know, like happened to Sharon Tate.
Now, here's the kicker. Why isn't anyone bringing this up in the media?
Oh, because it's easy to say, you know, it's like what Ethan was saying.
It's sensationalism.
It's like it's the villagers with the, you know, with the pitchforks and the torches. Yeah, it's Frankenstein's castle. That's where we're at right now. And I'm not, you know, I'm definitely not Whoopi Goldberg, but I'm not the other, you know, I'm kind of like you're saying, I'm kind of in the middle, and I'm probably more sympathetic to him than most people. But yeah, at the same time, I don't excuse it, but I don't think he's a monster. I think he did something monstrous, but I don't think he's inexcusable.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I say, you know, finish whatever sentence was going to be done, whatever. Yeah, even if you want to do time served, but there has to be a penalty for fleeing the country, I think.
Yes, and certainly for...
I'm not saying we need to drag up everything that happened. You know, this should be very, very clinical. This is just the way it has to be. And get it taken care of so that the guy can actually come back.
If he does come to America, though, I can't see it going well for him.
I can't either.
I think that's going to be really bad.
That's the caveat of it all. I mean, there is justice that needs to be served to an extent. Like I said, I'm not saying, you know, hang the guy up or cut off his junk or whatever. But
the one thing in Hollywood I will say, though, I think is ridiculous. There are a lot who are saying, like, well, you know, we totally got his back because he's a brilliant filmmaker. I think that is idiotic. Because if Steven Spielberg did this, even I wouldn't be like, no, you need to pay for your crime, you idiot. Look at what you did. No.
There was Indiana Jones 4.
Well, that's a crime unto itself, according to Dave. So.
I do feel like a lot of the headlines are like, oh, great filmmaker in trouble. Like, just because you're famous and you have this other life that doesn't excuse you for.
No. He is a great filmmaker, but he does need to pay for his crimes. He does.
What about his next movie? I'm really interested what happens with that.
Well, guaranteed. It'll probably be like the top grossing Polanski movie in a long time, you know, after all this. Yeah. So.
Okay, sorry. I'm going to change gears on this completely. How about that A-Team picture?
Look cool to me. I'm happy with it.
Oh yes, yes.
And you know, I can't just see Liam Neeson
with the
packing heat and a cigar in his mouth. Like, oh okay, I'm there opening day. That looks great.
Totally.
I'm stoked to see the guy from District 9 in it too.
Yeah, that was cool. A surprise.
And Rampage Jackson looks like decent as B.A. Baracus.
He does. You know, he does.
Bradley Cooper looks good. I'm just like, all I can think is the spaced mix of the A-Team theme. Oh wait, look, there it is. I don't know why. It's just. I love Spaced, and it's the A-Team. How do you go possibly wrong? And I didn't cue this up far enough. There it is. Just cannot go wrong with that goodness. Okay.
I would love it if they put that in the trailer.
Yeah, I would love that too. What were you saying, Ethan?
I just hope it doesn't cost $67.99 for a ticket to see it.
That is fair so enough. Awful, man.
Fair enough, yeah. Especially since I just noticed the first season's on Watch It Now last night.
Isn't it on Hulu as well, the A-Team?
I don't know.
I thought it was. Well,
none of which does Ethan any good, but you know.
That's right. Sorry. Yeah. Life can be cruel.
All right, what else have you got, sir?
New Avatar trailer.
Okay, so I'm actually going... I'm staying so spoiler-free from this, I'm actually going to leave the room for a minute or two. Because I want to stay as far away from any kind of news about this as possible.
Well, Ethan, are we really going to give anything away? I mean, is there anything new to give away?
Yeah, there's blue Thundercats. Like, what more is there to say?
Okay, then I'm good.
Because for me, it was all the stuff I saw on Avatar Day. You know, I got to see clips of the scenes that I saw that they didn't show in the initial teaser. And I think it gives more of a clear idea of what the plot is, and I think we all knew what the plot was. I don't know. I thought it looked pretty cool. It just showed a little more clips of action. Yeah.
I thought the first trailer was pretty lame, but this definitely got me amped up. And I was kind of thinking the movie was going to be like the next Dune, but now I think it's going to be like the next Krull. So, yeah.
Okay.
Krull is a step up from Dune. You're right, sir.
Actually, yeah, speaking of that, did you guys see that article about James Cameron in The New Yorker?
Like, no, I've heard it's really good, though.
Yeah, it's like awesome. He's like a real-life Ron Burgundy. It's awesome.
You know, I'll say this about the new trailer, and this is not a spoiler. They mention, like, from the director of, and they mention Terminator, Aliens, T2, True Lies, and Titanic. It's like...
No Abyss?
No Abyss. No Piranha 2, of course.
No Goats of the Deep?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Abyss.
Abyss would seem like it would be kind of a...
Well, this
crossover
was a
potential.
Well, plus, it was a box office disappointment, so maybe that's why they didn't list it. But yeah, I thought
because everybody
like,
you talk to loves that movie, especially Cameron's.
That's
cut.
My favorite Cameron movie. But yeah, it's not in them.
Well, though, speaking of that, all those movies—I mean, imagine you're sitting in a theater watching that trailer. All those movie titles flash by, but you're like, yeah. But the 13-year-old boy is like has seen none of those and is like, that's gay. So yeah.
Oh, man.
There it is. All right. Have you got anything else?
Well, this was a rumor, but apparently the Third Man remake is in the works with Tobey Maguire and Leo DiCaprio.
Please be a rumor. Please don't remake the Third Man.
The problem is that a lot of moviegoers don't look for the art in films. They never discover these really great movies. They just... Oh, it's another Leonardo DiCaprio movie. I gotta go see that.
You can't top The Third Man. It's Orson Welles. It's the Carol Reed film. That's, you know, that's like doing Psycho again. It shouldn't be done.
But that went so well.
Well, the thing is, like, what new could you do with it? Like, other than add gay subtext, like, what new could you do with it, really?
What could you do with Harvey?
Oh, snap.
Full circle.
I really wasn't doing that. I just meant, you know, really good movie that has a pointless remake.
I agree with you. No, we can come up with crap, but, you know, no, don't do it. Don't do it. It's bad enough to do and let the right one in. It's bad enough.
Okay, that was really... Do you have any, like, upper news at all, or should we just cut this off?
Oh, boy.
I'm so glad you brought up Polanski.
No kidding.
Such a downer.
How about that local sports team?
Darkest episode yet.
Yeah.
Well, at least the A-Team looks good.
Yeah, yes it does.
Is that all you got this week, Ethan?
Yeah, let's just move on.
That's cool. All right, let's take a quick break, and we will be back.
This is Ray.
Sup?
Let's listen in as Ray hits on Sandra.
Excuse me, miss, but do you know karate? Because your body is kicking.
Now, let's listen to the same scene. Only this time, Ray is sporting a quality Geek Label t-shirt.
Yo, baby, I was wondering,
Damn!
Rejection.
What's up with that?
We can't really stop it.
Damn.
But we can outfit you in buttery smooth designs for geeks, gamers, and tech heads. They're custom t-shirts. They're not magic t-shirts.
Damn.
Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
All right, and we're back. I had to play that at Geek Label spot because they're actually running a sale where they have like a whole bunch of $10 t-shirts. So I'll put a link up on the post on screengeeks.com. Check them out. Jay's a good guy. They have great shirts. I've got quite a few of them. So yeah, very cool. But this week, we actually get a proper intro from Wes Craven because, man, we sucked this last week.
Well, not to like repeat what Ethan's been saying, but I wish I could have heard that.
I know.
I've not heard a day.
I know. It's going up on Monday.
I'm sure you guys did fine. We're talking about Wes Craven's New Nightmare today. This is Craven towards the latter part, the second half of his career. Following the success of A Nightmare on Elm Street, he did a number of films that were very successful. The Serpent in the Rainbow was a box office hit in addition to being
that
one of his most
jacked up movies.
Very disturbing film, but very good, critically acclaimed. And then, of course, The People Under the Stairs, his socio-political horror movie, which was a box office hit and very popular. So Craven... The question was kind of like, what do you do next exactly? And one of the things everybody wanted him to do was go back to the Nightmare on Elm Street series. He left the series essentially because he had bad blood going on with New Line Cinema. They didn't give him proper profits with the first film. There were a lot of profits that came in. In fact, that movie essentially built New Line Cinema. It was the first time they ever got behind a movie like that. They spent $1 million on it. It grossed $25 million. In 1984, that's huge.
Yeah.
And New Line, it's a plaque that used to be on the side of the building, the house that Freddie built. And, of course, they've got, you know, Craven to thank. So what Robert Shea, the CEO at the time of New Line, did was, first of all, he buried the hatchet with Craven. He paid him back all the money that was due, totally like made up, and said, you know, we would love for you to come back. You really need to, if anybody's going to resuscitate this character, it's got to be you, because at this point, Freddy had become a joke. And I'm someone who liked the Nightmare on Elm Street sequels, but frankly, what happened was Freddy Mania kind of took over. The character became something of a jokester and a punster, and the fact that he is a child-murdering monster kind of got pushed to the side, and people were like, no, Freddy's funny and enjoyable. There were like Freddy dolls and action figures.
Oh, I remember all that.
Yeah, there was the Freddy TV show, Freddy's Nightmares. I mean, there was like a 1-900 Talk to Freddy hotline where you could like listen to Freddy jokes. I mean, it was ridiculous. But the thing is, Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare was one of the top grossing films of the year. So, of course, you know, they had to go back and do another one. And so the New Nightmare came from Craven. Instead of going in some direction of like coming up with a new story, he basically based it on everything that was going on at the time. Heather Langenkamp, who played Nancy in the first and third Nightmare on Elm Street series, she had been stalked. She was on a TV show. I think it was called Just the Ten of Us. She had a stalker at the time. The earthquakes were continually plaguing L.A., and all this stuff had been going on that Craven actually incorporated directly into the movie.
And she allowed a lot of that. I listened to the commentary on it. And he said there were only a few spots that she's like, look, we can't get this personal with stuff. But he's like, I'm surprised that she gave us that much level of access to paralleling her life.
Yeah, she's actually married to a special effects guy too, isn't
that's,
she?
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yes. Especially considering what happens to the fictitious version of that in the movie. Yeah, this is a very personal film. I admire the film. This is one of my favorite movies in addition to being one of my favorite horror films. Fellini did this in 8.5. American filmmakers don't do this sort of thing, you know, the movie within a movie within a movie.
Yeah.
This is a postmodernist horror film 2 years before Scream did this. This is a movie that is commenting on horror films and what balls this movie has. I gotta say, it's one thing for a horror movie to comment on violence. This movie is about the effects that horror films have on the people who make them and the people who watch them, especially children. That's taboo stuff. Horror movies are not supposed to talk about this stuff. This is a movie that's commenting on the effect that you, the audience, is having as you're watching this film. For that reason alone, I think this film is brilliant. I don't think the ending works as well as the rest of it. It has this really elaborate, spectacular ending that is, I think, a little much considering that the rest of it is so subtle. It's worth noting that some of the scariest parts in the movie don't even have Freddy in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that Robert Englund is in the movie playing himself, and he's just as creepy.
And when they have him painting all that stuff, you're like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, it's genius. And another thing about this movie, I got to say, Robert Englund, at this point, I mean, even now, he's like one of the heavyweight actors of horror movies. He was top billed in this movie. There's a line in this movie. It just shows how much they trusted Wes Craven. There's a line in the movie where someone asks Heather Langenkamp, playing herself, would you trust Robert alone with your children? I mean, think about this. They're asking about the star of this movie. Like, would you trust the man who plays Freddy Krueger to be alone with your child? That's a very uncomfortable and very creepy question. And the whole movie's like that. It's really taking a lot of chances. I love this film. I think it's exciting. I think it was just absolutely genius with some of the things that it does. I think it's a perfect bookend for the series. I really wish they had just ended it with this movie and not kept exploiting the Freddy character.
What did you think of this, Melissa? I know you said you didn't have a whole lot to say.
Yeah, you didn't like it as much as I did.
Well, I was going to say, do you feel like this is a prelude to the Scream trilogy?
Yes.
Because I'm glad I at least have seen the first one of Scream, because I felt like all the parallels between it. I mean, obviously Scream isn't as real as this was, but it just had parallels.
No, you're absolutely right. It's totally setting up and doing all the things that Scream did, although, of course, this movie breaks the fourth wall twice. Mm-hmm. There's even a moment in the movie where Wes Craven playing himself and Langenkamp are talking, and then it cuts to the screenplay. You see it being typed as they're talking. It's like the movie continually reminds us that we're watching a film or a Scream, even though the characters are aware that they're in a horror movie. It kind of stays.
It's different. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a movie within a movie. This is a movie within a movie within a movie, which is nuts. Mm-hmm. But
I don't know. I think that the factors surrounding when this movie was made are more interesting to me than the movie itself.
Sure.
Like the things about the Northridge earthquake.
Yeah.
And everything.
I miss that mall. I know they rebuilt it. I used to hang out at that mall all the time.
That's cool.
We moved, and 2 years later, that happened pretty much. Yeah, just pure random thing.
No, that's really cool.
I was shocked that they had Bob Shea in the movie.
Yeah, playing himself. Yeah, you don't see that every day.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think of this, Ethan?
About time, you ask. I really enjoyed this movie. I think it's extremely interesting, but I do think it has a few flaws. One being that Heather Langenkamp is freaking brutal in it. Oh my God, she's terrible. Terrible. There's a reason why in the movie she says, and this is another kind of reflective thing, when she says, oh, I just mostly do TV now. Yeah, that's for a reason.
Dang.
Oh, man.
And Barry mentioned this where he said, yeah, the whole climax of the movie is just kind of typical. I can understand maybe that's the point. It's supposed to be kind of, the fact that it does become a typical Freddy movie is the point, but it's still, eh. But all of that will obviously be improved in the Platinum Dunes remake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I will say about the ending, it's conceptually it's interesting, because it's the whole notion that the movie's going with is that Freddy is not just Robert Englund, he's not just the sweater-wearing monster, he is this mythological creature that goes back to, like Greek mythological times. So you see his domain, and it is something like out of Dante. It's this, it's the Greek columns, and it looks a very artistic picture book version of hell. But I don't know whether it's the fact that he gets a pitchfork at the end, or the bit with the tongue. It's so overdone. I mean, I love the scene where he reappears, where he's in the closet all of a sudden, it leaps out at her. I mean, for me, that was as good as it gets in terms of that. I don't think they needed to keep going with all the Freddy encounters, but
what that brings up, what did you think of the fact that they used that vehicle for Freddy, using that, the deep dark mythological creature is Freddy? Do you think it worked as an excuse to get him back to being that dark character again?
For me, it did, because I really want the character to be scary, and I thought he was really scary. When they did the reprise of the girl on the ceiling bit from the first film, I thought that was a very unsettling scene, and I think less is more with this character. I think when you show him in the daylight and he's waving at the audience with his claws, it's just not scary. So I like the fact that he's really not in the movie very much.
I'm not over the moon about this, but I have to say, I love that opening shot with the effect with the FX glove.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
I was going to mention about the opening. I really enjoy that too. Well, first I thought I'd not seen the movie in its entirety before, but I knew part of the setup was spoiler alert: her husband dying. I thought it was like, oh my, is he gonna get killed by the Freddy glove? That's just so on the nose. I was like, don't do this. Be smarter. But you know, then the dream ends and it cuts the earthquake, and I thought that was awesome. And of course, that kind of happens later in the movie, but it totally worked for me at that point. Like, it made sense.
Yeah,
when the aftershock hits and you have the cracks in the wall, mm-hmm. that was just creeped me out.
I love that. I love the phone call. I thought the Freddy tongue was much scarier in the sequel than it was in the first one when it jumps out of the phone and gets her. And for that matter, Miko Hughes is very creepy in this movie. The little boy.
Yeah.
The little boy from Pet Sematary.
I gotta say, he was kind of one of my problems with the movie, because I think my problem was that they never really let him be a real character. They just had him be this kind of guy who goes, the whole movie, and not enough being an actual child.
Yeah, so I kind of agree with that, Ethan, but
it would have been a stronger emotional connection for me if they'd let him be like an actual kid, and yeah, less of, yeah.
A plot device.
That's a good point. And he probably was, I think he was maybe a little too old for the role. But, I mean, if you're going to cast, I guess, a creepy, crazy kid, I mean, who better than the kid who was so disturbing in Pet Sematary?
Mm-hmm. Did you guys know that Craven wanted Johnny Depp to play himself in this, but I guess he was too afraid to ask him?
And then he was at dinner with Depp, and he was like, dude, you should have asked me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Depp would have done, which is really cool. Depp was in Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, too. So he, you know.
Yeah. It's like me and just so many girls, you know, they say, oh, you should have asked me out. I would have said yes.
Okay. There it is.
The reason I always like to point this out, the reason the film flopped was, of all things, I mean, and the reviews for this were fantastic. I forgot to bring my clippings with you. I mean, this thing got such great reviews, rave reviews, best of the series. It opened the same day as Pulp Fiction.
Oh,
you know, which is essentially the same, you know, R-rated fanboy audience, you know, and Pulp Fiction. I mean, the hype for that movie was deafening, and deservedly so. Pulp Fiction's brilliant. But and the other movie that opened that day, which was even more hype than this one, even though it's a terrible film, Exit to Eden. You remember that one?
I didn't see it. I remember.
It's an S&M comedy from the director of Pretty Woman. It's dreadful, dreadful.
Is that
bad.
The one with Rosie O'Donnell?
O'Donnell, yes.
Oh, and Dana Delaney. God, her in S&M? Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's dreadful. It's one of the worst movies ever made, really. But yeah, that opened the same day, and that was so hyped as well. So like you know, this movie had a lot to overcome. Like for one thing, you know, it was a new Friday the 13th. It was a new Nightmare on Elm Street movie, but like, you know, they officially got rid of Freddy 3 years ago. So I was like, oh, they're bringing that back. That's so corny. And he was up against all these other movies. I mean, had it been released at a different time, I think it maybe would have found its audience. And it's certainly been very successful on VHS and DVD releases. But yeah, when it opened October 14th, 1994, the same day as Pulp Fiction, it was dead in the water.
Well, you were mentioning like 3 years between in the last one. 3 years in like horror movie year? That's like a decade.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, because you're right. People move on. You're right.
Just look at the Saw movies. You know, it's one every year. So you don't. Mm-hmm. You make sure you don't forget.
You're right. And it was the same thing like with Child's Play. Like I find a lot of young people, they know Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky. They don't realize that there's an original Child's Play.
Like way scary.
And it's the best one. Yeah, the first one. Yeah.
Did you guys notice that the end credits, Freddy Krueger is himself?
That's right.
Yeah, I thought that was neat.
Actually, that's one of the things I really like. The scene, like all the scenes with people kind of intercut, like the funeral scene where there's an earthquake and she's like reaching, she's going to the casket and there's Freddy there, but there's also like Robert Englund as himself, like trying to help her out. I thought that was awesome. And when she's talking with John Saxophone, like it's kind of interesting him, like, you know, as her movie dad, but also her friend just talking about their children. It's like such an interesting, so many interesting layers there of the discussion. And yeah, it's really interesting.
No, I agree with you. The movie really does exist kind of essentially between two worlds, and it really is separating the art from from real life, but it's also saying how inevitably these things bleed through. I mean, truly, I mean, you know, how Langenkamp would have that kind of relationship with John Saxon because she played her dad, and how she would have kind of an uncomfortable, weird relationship with Robert Englund because he's been trying to kill her in all these movies. you know, and Craven, you know, of course you see, like, you know, he really is kind of like the evil genius mastermind behind this because, I mean, you know, he's living in like this like gothic squalor of a house, you know, that's really like fancy and gorgeous.
He was totally making fun of himself there too, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's living in this like, you know, mansion of a house, but there is something really moody and dark about him in this film, and, you know, and whether that's how true that is to really how he really is, this film is such a commentary on itself, and you just don't see that. And I think the worst thing you can say about the movie is it's inevitably pretentious because it's doing that stuff. But for me, I love it because I'd never seen that kind of thing before. And, you know, other than like Fellini, I don't think I've seen a lot of directors do this sort of thing better.
Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely admire it. I think it's a pretty good movie. I haven't been a big fan of the Nightmare on Elm Street films, but, you know, this is one of the few of them I've seen, and I definitely admire it. You know, just.
I was going to ask Barry. Well, this movie's obviously one of the things about it, obviously, is the effect of horror movies on children. Did you, like, see the Nightmare on Elm Street movies when you were a little kid? Because I didn't really see them until I was like in early high school. But
I did, and I was very troubled by them, to tell you the truth. I remember vividly, I guess I should prefix this. My brother and I, we had cable in our playroom. My parents were under the impression that we were only like watching the Disney Channel. Sorry, Mom and Dad. And, you know, we had HBO. And there was one night, I remember, where Marty came to me and said he was really afraid and he needed me to take care of something for him. I was in the bedroom. And he's like, okay, what is it? Well, I go in the playroom. It's like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. I don't know where my parents are. Nightmare on Elm Street 2 was on HBO. And Marty had accidentally turned it to that channel. And he was too afraid to go back in the room and turn off the TV. So I have to like go into the TV room, like all the lights are off, and I have to go to this thing and turn it off, and like Freddy's face is like in total close up. And I remember that. I remember that really scared Marty and I.
Way to sell out your brother. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, and I think that it's an excellent comment on the movie too. I mean, you know, whether you can defend it as art or not, or whether it's good or not, some stuff is just too messed up and too scary and just too inappropriate for children. I think this movie's commenting on that. You can defend these movies as art, but some stuff is not, will never be right for children. So,
Very true.
So I like that element of it. I think that's why it's an important film in addition to a really entertaining one.
Cool. So yeah, it's got a pretty good DVD release from New Line.
Yeah.
It's got the commentary from Wes Craven and some other fun stuff on there. So you can get that pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm hoping with the new Nightmare on Elm Street coming out next year that they'll re-release these movies like they did with the Friday the 13th movies. Just make them standalone DVDs, and it won't be like part of a collection, but these will be standalones with new like features and stuff. I'd love that.
To be fair, that was a cool box set that they have.
It was a great box set. Yeah, really great.
You came with the 3D glasses, right?
That's right. Yeah, so you could see Freddy's dead in 3D.
Cool. And what are we talking about next week?
What are we talking about next week?
Vamp in Brooklyn, right?
Vampire in Brooklyn. That'll be interesting. Yeah.
I'll have to go like rent that tomorrow.
Really quickly, did you two like The People Under the Stairs? Did you like it, Ethan? Or?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It wasn't scary, but it was really good.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely not scary. But
yeah, Ethan brought up most of the political stuff, like the you know, the Reagans. And
oh,
the,
yeah.
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 I felt like the child acting was just great and... What was his name? Fool, the little kid.
Yeah, Brandon Adams.
I just loved him. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about it a little bit since you didn't get to chime in on it? I know it's what you love this movie. So
I do. No, I'll just briefly say that I love showing this movie to my class because they got it. And I mean, beforehand I told them to look for that stuff, but they completely got it. I mean, you know, the villains, I mean, not only do they resemble our former first lady and President Reagan, but like, you know, they are not only exploiting those who are beneath them in the social ladder, but they literally have the dregs of society living at their feet, keeping them there. You know, who saves them but this young boy who's an African-American from a poor housing district, and at the end money literally rains down on everybody. I mean, you know, this is really a very personal film for Craven. It's like, as a horror movie, it really doesn't hold up very well, but as a socio-political message, I think it's really interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there. I mean, like, even the corridors the little boy is going through in the inside the house, they're almost like representing the city tenants that this kid is in. And some critics pointed out, like, Fool doesn't seem like he's all that scared to be in the house. Well, look at where Fool is living, the stuff that he sees every day. I mean, like, these crazy people are just crazy people. They're not as scary as the stuff that he has to see every day just going outside, you know, his tenant.
Heck, his part of town has Candyman, so, yeah.
Exactly.
Don't go there.
But no, I'm glad you guys liked it. I like it, too.
Cool. So Eddie Murphy and Wes Craven's collaboration, yes. Vampire in Brooklyn, is up next.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
That should be interesting. Yeah. Indeed. And let's go ahead and talk about what is hitting theaters this weekend.
Well, there's only one movie, and this is it. This is it, with Michael Jackson. Directed by Kenny Ortega. This is the guy who directed Newsies and High School Musical 3.
But is it really even directed? It's rehearsal footage.
Right. You know,
Macaulay!
And I wonder...
Yeah, I don't know.
Had Jackson lived, this probably would have been an extra on the DVD. This wouldn't have been a movie.
Or if it would have even been shown. Because he's not, you know, if he's doing a rehearsal as opposed to the live show.
Sure.
They just really should have re-released Captain EO.
Tell me about it.
I have nothing against that idea. I really don't.
There was a rumor that Disney was going to, and they came out, no, we're not going to do that. Why not?
What jerks. They should. I mean, they're not showing it at Epcot. It's just sitting in their vaults. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not Song of the South. You could present it to people.
I mean, what are you going to do? Oh, I'm sorry. You're going to take out Honey, I Shrunk the Audience. That's just such a loss. Not to say that Captain EO is a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, but they're still letting certain questions about his past, yeah. But
the curiosity factor is too good, though. I mean, Coppola directed it. Lucas wrote it. You know, It should be seen. It should be seen. And he's very good in it. He's good in it. His dancing and his singing is terrific. That's what people want to see. That's what they expect from the gloved one.
Like, they were. Did you hear the rumor that Lucas was going to do 3 more Star Wars movies in 3D?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he wanted Coppola and Spielberg to work on it? I'm like, what, is this another Captain EO experience? What the heck? So, yeah. But, no, that's not happening. Thank Pez.
Oh, good. That was just a rumor?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Well, as of right now, who knows?
Yeah.
Did you guys ever have Atari?
Yeah.
I had an Intellivision 2 with the Atari 2600 adapter.
Because there was actually a Michael Jackson game on Atari where, like, he actually saves little kids.
Wasn't the Genesis. That was Moonwalker.
Moonwalker, yeah. I remember that as an arcade game.
It may have been on the Atari Jaguar. That's probably... Okay.
Yeah, I have no idea what game console it was actually on, but yeah. Seen some footage of that game. Hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they had it at the arcade in Disneyland because they used another part of me in the soundtrack for the arcade machine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember playing that back.
Here.
I remember playing the arcade game back in the day, like years ago. But yeah, I don't remember. Is it a Genesis game? That's interesting.
Well, it was like a side scroller. It wasn't as good as the arcade game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. See, and I've just started playing Fallout 3, so my movie watching time is dropping. Yeah, it's just bad. There's a couple things opening limited, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes. Also, Troy Duffy's long-awaited Boondock Saints 2: All Saints Day. With everybody except for Willem Dafoe from the original.
I'm okay with that.
Well, you know, if you've seen Overnight, the documentary on Troy Duffy, it's no wonder that Dafoe refused to come back. This is the documentary about why Duffy essentially neutron bombed his movie career. But it's an interesting documentary. Hmm. Also opening House of the Devil with Udo Kier, which I've heard is like the best babysitter should not have taken this job horror movie.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that looked interesting. And then finally, from the director of Napoleon Dynamite, Gentlemen Broncos, which looked interesting. It's about a guy who writes a screenplay, and I guess like a Hollywood director takes it and completely screws it up. So maybe it's autobiographical. I don't know. It could be interesting.
All right, cool. We're running long, and I'm not feeling good, so we're going to skip voicemails one more time. I'm sorry, Valencia, and everyone who
has
left
them.
Oh, we've got a few to play. We will catch up next week. Because I need to concentrate on getting this episode and last episode out. You're going to get a twofer Monday, I think.
Yay!
You can do it.
Yes, but let's talk about what's hitting DVD next week. This is looking pretty promising, too.
Yes. Well, let's get the junk out of the way. Ashley Tisdale in Aliens in the Attic was in theaters 5 minutes ago, and 5 minutes later is on DVD.
And still no one notices.
No one. A Guilty Pleasure, not a good movie. G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. Stupid, but would I see it again in a heartbeat? Heck yeah. Stupid,
I'll
but
watch
fun.
It.
It's fun.
I might pre-street it. I might, yeah.
The Taking of Pelham 123, the remake by Tony Scott with John Travolta and Denzel Washington.
Not a bad movie.
Not bad. Not bad. Travolta's very good. Yeah. Star Wars Clone Wars Season 1.
I was tempted to ask you to make that the crap title of the week, but I decided not to.
Moving on. Watchmen, the ultimate cut. But will this be the last time they release the movie?
No.
There will be a super box set with all three cuts. And
I'm sure.
No special features.
So. Lame. Walt Disney Treasure, Zorro, Season 1 and 2. Okay. How cool.
It's cool and it's not cool. Like, I wanted you to bring this one up so I can go rail on Disney a little bit. As I'm wearing my Goofy t-shirt. usually these sets run about $25-$27 a piece.
Not this time.
Each season is like $40 if you buy it from Amazon. If you go to Best Buy, it's going to be like $50 a season. For like a disc or two. I'm like, really, guys? You're kind of milking this a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the Zorro series. It's good. It's fun. It's silly. It's like Frontierland, an Adventureland visit, probably.
Sure.
But give me Song of the South, for crying out loud. Please.
That's an excellent point. Though it is amazing that you're wearing your Goofy shirt as you're waving your fist at Disney. But
I kind of am. And now I want to go watch my Disneyland USA Disney treasure. Yeah, I don't know.
It reminds me of like the Star Wars fans for years. Like, damn you, George Lucas! And, ooh, it's coming out. I will buy it again.
I am Homer Borg. Resistance is, ooh, donuts.
What else we got here? Oh, one of the worst films of the year, I Love You, Beth Cooper, based on Larry Doyle's novel. Please, listeners, read the book. It's one of the funniest I've ever read. I laughed out loud almost every page. The movie is garbage. I don't care if it has Hayden in it. It is terrible, terrible, bad. Also coming out, The Dead, the last film that John Huston ever did, starring his daughter Angelica Huston, based on a great, great book, I believe. I believe the short story was by James Joyce, if I'm not mistaken. Great story, great movie. Criterion version of Howard Zinn, nominated for Best Picture, lost to Unforgiven. Also Criterion, Wim Wenders, Wings of Desire. Great film. This is the movie, of course, it was remade as City of Angels. See the original. It's much better. As Ethan so perfectly put it, stars Hitler, Bruno Ganz from Downfall, as an angel who is in love with a woman and decides to leave eternity behind in order to be immortal and be with her. It's a beautiful, extraordinary film, available on Blu-ray and DVD. Excellent choice. You're Welcome, America, An Evening with George W. Bush, starring Will Ferrell. This is the filming of the Broadway special that aired on HBO. I've heard it's hysterical. Ethan, you like this?
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing this one. White Christmas, because, you know, it's not Halloween yet, but really you should be buying White Christmas right now, apparently.
Not the only Christmas thing that's going to be popping up. I'm just
no,
saying.
No. And then we got Turner Classic Movies, and we got a few sets.
Okay, so yeah, we've got three of them coming out. I have the horror one. I actually just gave it to Melissa to borrow for the weekend, or the week, or whatever. They're doing a Christmas one with Christmas in Connecticut from 1945, the 1938 version of A Christmas Carol. If you listen to our interview with Ethan, Robert Picardo and Ethan Phillips.
Yes.
You heard Ethan Phillips talk about how much he loves the Alistair Sim Christmas Carol. That's what this is.
Excellent.
The Shop Around the Corner, and It Happened on Fifth Avenue, which are apparently very good as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And like on Amazon, it's $17 for four movies.
That's terrific. That's, awesome. That's really good.
Beautiful. And then let me see, what are the other two we've got?
Then you got the Hitchcock ones, right?
Yes, there's a Hitchcock set that has... Oh, wait a minute. Oh, you're making me skip around.
Sorry.
It's okay. The Hitchcock one, same thing, $16. Has Suspicion, Strangers on a Train. I love Strangers on a Train.
Awesome movie.
The Wrong Man. Huh?
I just said Me Too.
It's so good, yes. The Wrong Man and I Confess. It's not a bad set.
Not at all. Not at all.
And then finally, we've got a comedy set that, let's see, again, $16. Arsenic and Old Lace, one of my favorite Cary Grant movies, period, because it's just so wrong.
So funny.
Marx Brothers, A Night at the Opera, a classic. Hmm. The Long, Long Trailer, and Father of the Bride, the 1950 version.
That's great. What a great set.
Like, yeah, Turner Classic Movies is really stepping up these kind of... Mm-hmm.
Now, is there anything on these movies, or is it just the film?
If it's anything like... Let me see the horror one. It's got all kinds of stuff on it. Oops, sorry.
Because, like, Strangers on a Train, the DVD by itself has got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, like, on the horror set, there were two disc editions or a flipper of House of Wax and The Haunting. They mentioned features on the other side. Obviously, they're not there. But House of Wax has a premiere newsreel, theatrical trailers. The Haunting has a commentary by, like, Julie Harris, Claire Bloom, most of the people, and Robert Wise.
Wow.
Yeah, it's got essays, theatrical trailers. Freaks has the a commentary on it. I mean, they're pretty loaded.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, it's well worth it.
Oh, cool. And, of course, you got to, if you love Strangers on the Train, you got to see the sequel, Throw Mama from the Train. I love that movie. And did you see the Simpsons Halloween special? They did a really great Hitchcock parody of Strangers on the Train. It's great. It's on Hulu. It's really good.
Okay.
All right. What else we got? North by Northwest, the 50th anniversary edition. One of Hitchcock's best. Hitchcock's James Bond movie.
Yeah, on DVD and Blu-ray. This is, I'm guessing that would be gorgeous on Blu-ray.
Oh, so good, so good. Fraggle Rock, the final season. Hopefully it ends a little better than Dinosaurs, the final episode. God, that was so sad.
That's why I brought that up.
And there's the entire series being released the same day, too.
Nice. Oh, that's cool. Does it come with the radish, though? That's what I
want.
Think
so.
It has to come with radishes, or else I'm not down with that. And then finally, our crap title of the week. And man, did Dave come up with a doozy. I got to say, Dave, you really outdid yourself. Erotic Force.
Do you want me to read the
Please,
the
what is Erotic Force about, Dave?
I'm going to skip who's in it. Oh, good. Yeah, this is just shocking how bad it is. Wait a minute. No, that's the Turner Classic Movies Holiday Collection. That's not going to be correct. Starring a story involving a corrupt police force where hustlers become a prime target of the officer's sexual desires. One by one, the sergeant fires the officers for misconduct on the force. But when he himself becomes the focal point of the corruption and the prime target of a takedown investigation including sex, drugs, and missing cash, all that's missing is rock and roll, he finds himself fired from the force. Will the love of his life let him back in, or will he spend eternity alone? You know, just the cover itself... I mean, there's no way I'd like...
And how long is this movie, Dave?
It is 50 minutes long. 5-0. 15 would be even funnier, I think, but yeah.
Just love, like, the concept. Like, there's been a sexy crime. Send in Erotic Force.
There's our winners. Okay. Yeah.
Although, I gotta say, I don't think we ever topped Retard Dead.
That's
true. About the handicapped zombies. For me, that was, like... I'm still offended by that one. I really am. I don't think we've ever topped that one.
I just like the way you're saying Erotic Force. It's like a 70s kids cartoon.
Well, I was thinking more like the ambiguously gay duo, but yeah, it is more like it is kind of like Schoolhouse Rock, isn't it?
It's like Cop Rock for kids, but not really.
Cop Rock for kids. Oh, man.
Okay, lack of sleep.
Downhill. We're going downhill.
Wait, Cop Rock?
Yeah.
You don't know what Cop Rock is?
I thought you said Cock Rock.
No.
Thank you. Of course, leave it to Ethan to take us down a notch even lower.
Well done, sir. We've been talking too heady and, you know, highbrow earlier in the episode, especially during the news segments.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So if you want to shoot us an email, go ahead and do podcast Ethan, Melissa, Dave, or Barry all at screengeeks.com. We have a voicemail number. I'm not looking it up. next week, we're talking about Vampire in Brooklyn. It's going to be an interesting discussion, I think.
Yes.
But yeah, it shall be fun. Come back and join us. Until then, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
And this is Melissa.
Take it easy.
Happy Halloween.